Oh, my word. Here we are, third Friday of the month. This is Peace and Social Justice, and I am your host, Pastor Jesse Kearns, third Friday host. And I got to tell you right now, we have got a full show today. I've got a lot of folks. I so apologize for the quality of the sound recording when you have to do your interviews outside of the studio. Sometimes you're dealing with less than ideal sound equipment, but I want to get right in on this interview today. My first guests today on Peace and Justice are Marin Hambly, who is the Shelter Operations Manager for Project Roomkey, and Deanna Schwab, who is the President of the Board of Directors for Safe Space. Welcome. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. I've got to tell you, right now, I'm upset. Normally, I would have a big list of questions here, and we would talk reasonably and logically and how we should answer these questions, but I'm fired up now, and I'm just going to kind of give you an introduction of why I'm fired up. I know recently, Marin, I've had you on the show talking about Project Roomkey and what a marvelous program that was, and how it met some very specific needs in our community. Deanna, I deal with you mostly when it's time for safe space shelter in the winter, and churches open up their doors of their facilities to house people a week at a time. And I was so happy earlier this year when both of you were telling me about the prospect of having a permanent shelter. And I was so happy because I know last year there was that possibility, and then at the last minute something came up and you had to scramble for churches. And, you know, we had to kind of rearrange some things at our church in order to make that happen. And I know there was a couple of churches that normally participated that could not because they made plans. So that was frustrating for you all. But here again, this year, you all were saying, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. And so when Gail Hill, who I believe is a member of your board, came up to me last week when we were working on a project, a tiny house project down in Oroville, she said, Jesse, we got a problem. The permanent shelter was a no-go because of some financial things that needed to take place before that shelter could be in operation. What is going on with Safe Space Winter Shelter, Deanna?
Okay, I'm glad you asked. Let's just make a couple of clarifications here.
Okay.
Number one, when we're talking about the new Navigation Center, True North Housing Alliance and Safe Space need to both be in that same sentence.
Oh, okay.
Because True North will be the lead agency, and they are subcontracting with Safe Space to be the operators, much like at the Project Roomkey. True North is the lead agency, and they subcontract with Safe Space to be the operator.
Okay.
You know, the old adage in real estate has always been time is of the essence.
Yeah.
And we presented the city council with our homeless opportunities plan in September.
Yes.
Thinking that if they acted, then we would be able to open in November.
Right.
At a pre-approved location that we found.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for whatever reasons, things dragged on and on and on and on. And it came to November, and we still didn't have anything. And then once the city did finally approve the funding for those opportunities that had been placed before them, the owner of the property that we were hoping to lease had already leased it to someone else. And the plan B that we looked at, that property had already been sold. So it's a little, last week was a pretty tough week for Safe Space. We're the Energizer Bunnies, though. You know, we get knocked down, and we're back up by a couple of days later. So we are continuing along with True North and the city to explore other opportunities. Instead of looking for something that's 50,000 square feet, we're looking at things that are 25 to 30,000 square feet, with the caveat being we cannot look at anything that does not currently have sprinklers. So that eliminates a lot of properties. Also, with that change in requirement in terms of the square footage, it also means that we will not be able to house as many guests. Instead of 160 guests, we're probably looking at 80, maybe 100. And again, that will be because of the COVID precautions and practices that we will be abiding by.
Right.
Also, I want to make sure that everybody understands that the navigation center is not a permanent solution. This is just a 1 year, you know, six month, because wherever we land right now will probably not be our final location, but we are looking at a permanent location after this temporary phase. We just know that we can't afford to do nothing.
Right.
So that's where we are. Does that help?
That helps tremendously. It doesn't quite help with what's going on in my heart right now. Because I went to Costco the other day to pick up a prescription. And typically I get to Costco via First Avenue 99, that little loop right there. Mm-hmm. And rather than going home the way I came, I decided to go home the Cypress way. I was coming down Cypress, and of course there's a little piece of land there which has been derogatorily called the Devil's Triangle. And I noticed quite a few more tents there than the last time I had passed that place. And also I pass Bidwell Park in a place where there are a lot of tents there. And this was on a day where it was rainy and cold. And I thought, if we aren't able to do safe space shelter, if churches are unable to do that, and this upset me because we have set up our building this year when we were told, hey, there's going to be the possibility of a shelter this winter so the churches wouldn't have to house people. We set up to where our church that we nest here, the Hispanic Church, Agua Viva, is set up in the hall where we typically would have safe space. But we also have the added complications of COVID restrictions, which means we don't have a custodial staff at the moment that can provide what safe space would need in order to keep it sanitized and be in compliance with the COVID restrictions. Now, when I learned this, we were still in orange, which the tiers go purple, red, orange, yellow, yellow good, purple the worst. And so we bypassed red altogether. We went from orange to purple, and that is the highest restrictions. How do those restrictions affect your ability to find shelter for people who need it this winter?
Well, that's a great question, and one that Safe Space answered 24 hours after we found out that the building that we thought we were going to lease was no longer available. And our first reaction was, well, let's go back to our faith partners, and maybe we can find one of those faith partners that has adequate square footage that we've used in the past, and let's see if we could stay there for 30, 60, 90 days with a select 30, maybe 35 guests, again, depending on square footage and COVID, blah, 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 blah. And so that's the direction we were going. And then I was relaying that information to Susie Kokums at the City of Chico and Joy Amaro. And Susie said, well, you can't do that. You know, the churches have to be sprinklered as well as, you know, commercial buildings.
Really?
And I said, really? I said, well, I don't think that's true. I said, we've operated on the understanding that churches were exempt from having sprinklers. So I talked to the gentleman in code enforcement, and indeed, the city code is that for any overnight sheltering, a building must have sprinklers, whether it's a commercial building or whether it's a church. And I said, well, wow. I said, I'm really surprised. I said, why didn't this come up before? And he said, because you never asked. And I said, oh, to self, I go, oh, I'd like to make this a Groundhog Day. Can we just go back one day yeah. and just operate in ignorance? But mm-hmm. we can't. So that is why it's square footage plus sprinklers equals okay. our next step.
Well, if you're just tuning in, this is Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR 90.1, and we are talking to Marin Hambley and Deanna Schwab. We're talking about shelter crisis here in Chico. Okay, I did not know this about the sprinkler, because you and I have always been under the understanding that faith churches were exempt from that. And now you found out that that's not the case. What in the world are we going to do?
Well, I'm very confident that we'll be able to find something soon. The city, True North, and Safe Space are currently looking at properties this week, or physically touring properties. And I'm glad you're enraged. I'm glad you're upset, because that's where change takes place.
Right.
And I'm going to burst your bubble, because there is hope. There's help coming.
Good.
Cavalry is coming.
Good.
It's been almost 2 years to the day since the campfire. And out of crisis and out of necessity often comes invention and innovative and creative. So after the campfire, where we lost 14,000 units of housing, the federal government, FEMA, whenever a city has a national disaster declared like this, one of the first things they do is they bring people from FEMA in. And we had a meeting, and I mean Butte County Continuum of Care and every service provider in the county. They put us in a room, locked the door, and said, all right, let's talk. What do you have right now in your toolbox to alleviate homelessness?
Right.
What do you need, and how are we going to make an action plan to make that happen? So the past 2 years, we've seen an incredible amount of collaboration between the county agencies and every service provider in this city and in this county. And we have mapped out a continuum of care. You know, just like schools have a continuum of care. You start at kindergarten, you go to elementary school, you go to senior high, you go to college. Mm-hmm. Healthcare has a continuum. You start at the walk-in clinic, then you go to your primary doctor, then you go to a specialist, and then maybe to a hospital.
Right.
So solving homelessness should have that same continuum of progressive, results-oriented start and finish. So in terms of the most visible part of our continuum of care that's missing a huge gap are those people that I see that are in the encampments.
Right.
They're the ones that, you know, are most visible.
Yes.
They're the ones that everyone sets their hair on fire, because they're such a detriment to our waterways, our parks, our quality of life, blah, 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 blah. They are on this part of the continuum.
Mm-hmm.
They will probably be the hardest, I think, to find a solution for.
Yeah.
Because, number one, a lot of them have been entrenched in that lifestyle for a while.
Right.
Many of them have pets, several pets, several big pets, and they have lots and lots and lots and lots of stuff.
Yes.
And probably socially, they probably are not going to find it attractive to go from their own tent campsite into a congregate shelter like Safe Space.
Sure.
So there are people out there that are currently, as we speak, working on different options for them, such as Conestoga huts, such as a tiny house village, such as a sanctioned campground or a sanctioned parking area. So there are things in the works you just don't see, but it is working, and we think that it's going to happen. So, you know, let the community know. We hear you, we're taking action, and the wheels of progress are working.
Yeah.
I do want to add a little bit there, just to add, with all the folks we see unsheltered right now, I really want to emphasize that the gap in the problem and the reason there's nowhere to go is on our community and on our city, right? If there were myself, if I was unsheltered, I also wouldn't want to be with 150 people in a room.
Yeah.
I would, you know, if you add on additional previous trauma, if you were ever institutionalized, ever stuck in prison or been assaulted, right? Going into a shelter is no small feat. And so the gap here is really on the city not having enough housing and not having enough housing solutions, right? If you talk to these individuals living outside, they have ideas, right? They have ideas about how they want to live, where they want to go. And it's more about the giant gap in services where we don't have solutions that meet their needs. But that's not a fault of their own. That's a fault in the community.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of what they need, how about we ask them?
Right.
What a great concept. You know, rather than us determine what we think they need, let's have consistent outreach to build trust. And let's talk about, you know, what would it take? What are you looking for? What do we need to provide in order for you to feel comfortable taking this next step?
Right.
And then it's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a little break to recognize the people who make this show possible. And that is the people here that support our community radio and our underwriters.
And Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op, open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And by Chico Velo, supporting bicycling, education, and advocacy since 1980. Chico Velo encourages you to ride your bicycle and park it safely at their bike valet when available at the Thursday night market and the Saturday's farmers market. For more information, visit chicovelo.org and find them on Facebook. Now back to our interview in progress.
If you're just tuning in, this is Peace and Social Justice on KZFR 90.1. And today we have Marin Hamley and Deanna Schwab representing Safe Space Winter Shelter and Project Roomkeet. What inspired me to call them in today to talk about what's going on is my outrage of what seems to me a lack of empathy in our community. I was at a funeral service. It was an outdoor funeral service several weeks ago that my wife was officiating, and I was there as kind of the sound guy to help her out. And I was able to hear some of the conversations that people were having at that funeral, and there was a group of people who were just speaking about the homeless population as if they were pigeons or rats, and in fact they were using terms like that. That was suggesting that they were a vermin that was infesting our city. Outraged me. What outraged me even more was that these people were a part of a faith community, a Christian faith community. What upset me even more than that was when Gail Hill told me about the troubles that you were having finding shelter, that they had approached a church that just outright rejected the idea on the basis that the homeless that we are trying to house are somehow beyond redemption, that it's their fault and they are undeserving of any services that we offer them. And that makes me so mad, because as a minister in a Christian church, I do not see evidence in the scripture that any of that is true. In fact, just the opposite. And here we go. I'm sorry, I'm preaching here, okay? A lot of the churches who seem to have this attitude about the homeless and not being willing to show hospitality for our homeless people are ones who want to use the story in Genesis 18 and 19, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. What they want to make that into is the narrative that they spin is the reason why Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed was because there were homosexuals among that population. And the problem is, in that text itself, it says the reason why the cities were destroyed was because of lack of hospitality. They did not show hospitality to Abraham and his family. And you think, okay, well, that's a one-off there. Me, I'm a red-letter Christian. Anytime I find a contradiction in the scripture or something doesn't make sense, what I mean a red-letter Christian is when I was a kid, I was given a Bible that all the words of Jesus were in red. And even Jesus says in every one of the Gospels except John that the reason Sodom was destroyed was because they refused to receive strangers. That was the sin of Sodom. And so, you know who the real Sodomites are?
Yeah.
It's the churches who will not bring in the stranger to show hospitality to the one who needs to be fed and clothed. And that upsets me to no end. And it upsets me more that here I am, somebody who preaches that gospel, and I can't do anything right now because I don't have sprinklers, because we're in COVID restrictions. Mm-hmm. I'm upset. I want to know what to do. And so I ask you, what can I do? What can faith communities in this community, in Chico and Butte County, do to help these people who so desperately need housing?
My first answer is there are more people that can act than just the current service providers. There are more people that can act than just the city, and also to lean on the city. Like, I think something I've learned in the work I've done in Chico is, you know, a solution is just an act away, right? Like, if you see someone who's hungry, you can either call around to figure out who's supposed to be feeding them, why they're not doing their job, which is an effective accountability tool, and you can also go buy a $5 meal from somewhere and also feed them in that moment, right? There's and both are important, but I think recognizing our own power as individuals to take action, as individuals join and create a collective action is stronger, but the powers of mutual aid, of seeing your own agency in solving problems, because, you know, like I was saying earlier, these are community failures. We all have responsibility in that our community is not caring for one another. Mm-hmm. And I think right now in Chico, some of the things I'd love to see is, you know, the city's resources circling around solving how to do warming tents and COVID, right? Safe space is always going to come up with creative solutions. And even in best case scenario, we open tomorrow, there's still going to be hundreds of people we can't shelter who are going to go through freezing temperatures wet. And there needs to be more people working to solve this problem instead of yelling at it or handcuffing it. It doesn't work. And so I'd say, you know, pressuring the city to figure out warming tents, to open up more spaces, to go out on a line for our neighbors who happen to not have a roof right now.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jesse. This is a really disheartening message from our, not only our community, but especially our faith-based partners. I don't know how we got here, but I do know that this is not the way the world's supposed to be.
No.
We can do better. We can solve these problems. It's going to take all of us. I just ask people to be open to the suggestion that each of these people have value.
Right.
Each of them have their own experience. They may be different from yours, but that doesn't make something right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's that we're simply different. I think, of course, we, because of COVID-19, we were somewhat handcuffed by inviting volunteers to come in and help. And I think that's frustrating for the faith community because y'all have always been so good at that, particularly in terms of meals. But I would suggest that, you know, get involved, you know, get on your computer, find out what are the organizations in our community that are doing, that are walking the walk and talking the talk.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't volunteer physically, donate money, write letters, get involved with Zoom rooms. But doing nothing is just not an option. And that's what we've done for the past 20 years. You know, we're at the point now where the only solution many people see is to criminalize and punish the poorest and most vulnerable people among us.
Yeah.
Well, we've done that. And you can see that it's an untenable situation.
Right.
We've not solved anything. If anything, we've made it worse.
Yeah.
You know, I just think of, you know, particularly people who don't have a personal connection to someone who is homeless. I think of my favorite volunteer from your church, Barbara Mann.
Yes.
Barbara Mann is an elder at this church who was so opposed to having safe space here the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And Pastor Jesse talked to her and, well, let's just try it. Let's see what happens. And she said, well, by golly, I'm going to be there every night.
Yep.
I'm going to be there every night, and I'm going to see what's going on. And I don't know. It wasn't very long into the week, and she was over at the drink station, and she became the grandmother that greeted every person at the drink station.
Mm-hmm.
Not only
loved her.
Talking to them. Oh, my gosh. And then, it was just an amazing transformation, all because she encountered someone unlike herself,
mm-hmm.
and met them where they were.
Right.
It doesn't take that much. You know, kindness is a powerful, powerful tool.
Yeah.
Dignity, knowing their names.
Yeah.
When I started working with the homeless, I knew absolutely zero. Zero, 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 and maybe a little less than zero. And I thought, well, this is pretty scary. But I said, the two things I know I can do is I have a really good ability to remember people's names,
mm-hmm.
and I'm kind.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay. And I'll tell you, those two things will go a long way in breaking down barriers between the thems and the us, the outsiders and the insiders. So let's just all take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
We're all in this together. We can fix it. We can make it so much better. And I think the city of Chico deserves that, and I think they want it.
Yeah, the city wants it, for sure.
Yeah, and until people hear that there are absolutely plans in progress,
mm-hmm.
you know, to go from A to B to C to Z, they're going to be frustrated and they're going to be angry. So let's tout the word that, hey, the cavalry's coming. There's help on the way. The county has a plan through their continuum of care.
Yeah. I guess the thing that I think would be a challenge, because as someone who whose vocation is teaching a person to look at the world in a different way, in a kinder and more compassionate way, I know that I can't make somebody do that. You know, I can't, the old saying about leading a horse to water, but you can't make that horse drink. I am concerned when there is a radical change in leadership in local government, be it county or city.
Mm-hmm.
I am concerned that it might be difficult train, teach a new group of leaders the importance of compassion and kindness. How in the world do we do that? This is my tough question that I'm laying on the table today. How in the world do we show leaders in our community who maybe in the past have shown not so much compassion to folks who are homeless? How do we model that compassion to them to change their heart, like Pharaoh the story of Pharaoh in the Old Testament. You know, Moses was always trying to, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, you know. How in the world do we unharden people's hearts?
I mean, if I'm going to be very, very frank with you.
Yes.
I am so done and exhausted with fighting to care about people.
Right.
I don't want to argue to care about someone anymore.
Yeah.
I've done it in front of city council for nearly every single one of my jobs. I've done it again and again. And I'm not interested in, like, leading the council to Compassion Water. I'm going to keep caring. I'm going to organize and galvanize the community around caring. And I think the city council members will learn very, very quickly that their lack of compassion also isn't going to solve the problem.
Right.
Right? If they want to approach it with no solutions and anger and criminalization and policing, they will realize that that does not solve homelessness either.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going to keep doing my work and put my energy where it's worth it, and not try and defend my acts of care anymore.
Thank you both for being on the show. This is Peace and Social Justice on KZFR.
And, of course, this is KZFR 90.1, Chico listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And I am your third Friday host, Pastor Jesse Kearns. And, my golly, I was preaching today, so I think I should say this. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. We celebrate diversity here in all of its infinite combinations. And so we hope that we are bringing you the very best of programming here at KZFR. And if you are enjoying this program, you can go to KZFR.org and tip this show.
This is a public service message from 90.1 KZFR. The Hispanic Resource Council, the African American Family and Cultural Center, Samias, and Anthem Blue Cross are hosting a free drive-up distribution of food, PPE, and various agency information on Saturday, November 21st at 3 p.m. The event will be held at the St. Thomas the Apostle School, 1380 Bird Street in Oroville. That's the St. Thomas the Apostle School, 1380 Bird Street in Oroville. Food will be distributed on a first-come, first-served basis. Please no early arrivals. Distribution begins at 3 p.m. To assure the health and safety of volunteers, please stay in your vehicle and maintain social distance at all times. Details on Hispanic Resource Council Facebook page. Thank you.
And here you are on Peace and Social Justice. Whew, gonna take a little breath right now. This is the deal with pre-recorded interviews, as you are kind of a slave to the clock on that. But I can breathe a little bit now, give you a little background on what's going on today. I've got my mask on, and I know I sound somewhere in between Kenny on South Park and the teacher on Peanuts from Wah Wah. But the reason why I've got this mask on, because here in the studio is another awesome programmer here for our public affairs program, and that is Guillermo Mash. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jesse, and thanks for all you're doing.
Sure.
I love that interview. Thank you, Safe Space.
Yes, exactly. Safe Space
rocks.
Is awesome. They rock. So, Bill, I understand that what we're going to be talking about today is something that you have been that's been on your heart too. I'm kind of preaching today, so I thought, well, we'll bring Bill in here and we'll both preach.
Well, just a little backstory, you know, a short backstory is I really felt blessed, Jesse, when you reached out and said you had some time. You know, do I have anything to talk about? Because this is right in your ballywick. These are some letters I wrote right around being Christ-like and how we view folks that are experiencing poverty and homelessness.
Right.
And now, just the shortest of background on me, I mean, as I was a runaway, Jesse, before there was even the term homelessness. So I know what it's like to be a youth sleeping on the street. And I spent time literally documenting the homeless while being homeless. And I've spoken to people all across the country around this issue.
Yeah.
And there was a time when I was really young that I was thinking maybe I wanted to be a pastor.
Uh-huh. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I was very involved in the Primitive Methodist Church in my hometown. So anyway, I guess this is part of my genetics. And, the vernacular around the election and some of the talk around town about, you know, finally cracking down. We're finally going to have the right people that know how to put these people in their place.
Yeah, right.
It just became offensive to me. So I really felt compelled to write some letters to the editor. And I thought it would be a nice venue just to kind of read those letters and pause during the letters and have some conversation around them.
Sure, absolutely. Let's hear them.
This is one I penned about a week ago. I met a friend Saturday at the Chico Farmers Market who shared how a nonprofit had approached a local church inquiring to use their space to shelter those without a roof. The church declined with the ungospel gravitas that the houseless were being punished by God for their indiscretions. I'd like to pause a little bit on that and talk about, a good friend of mine, Eric Chisler, who was on a couple of weeks ago, had said they need to have their masters in divinity revoked. I mean, as far as what you've learned in your teachings, how far off is this from what you have been taught?
Diametrically opposed.
Yeah.
Everything that I've ever read about Jesus, and you got to understand, and I'm gonna in our second interview today with Shalom Free Clinic, uh-huh. I'm what they call a red letter Christian.
Me too.
Yeah, and yeah. To explain to the viewers, to explain
that.
The audio on this is when I was a little kid, I was given a Bible. It was a King James Bible, mm-hmm. hard to understand, but the words of Jesus were printed in red.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I go through the scripture and I'm evaluating, especially maybe difficult texts from other parts of the Bible, I go to those red letters. I go to the words of Jesus because in my faith and practice, Jesus is, if you want to know the character of God, the person of Jesus is the one who expresses that the mm-hmm. best. And everything about Jesus is always about caring for the hungry, caring for the poor, encouraging institutions, encouraging leaders to lead in that example as well. And so to hear that a church is turning people down for helping them. And this is what, in the last interview, when Gail Hill, she's the minister of the First Baptist Church here in town,
right.
When she came and told me, she's on the board of Safe Space, when she came and told me that Safe Space wasn't going to be able to go about with their plan that they were going to do, she said, yeah, we approached one church who was perfectly equipped to do this. It was built past 1975. It had sprinkler systems. They were not using the building. It would have been the perfect place. Location was great, too. Would have been the perfect place to have Safe Space Winter Shelter. And they said no because the people who we are serving, the reason why they're in that position is they brought it on themselves. And like you say, it's a punishment for whatever sins that the church perceives they committed. And that horrifies me. And, where I went to get my Master of Divinity certainly didn't teach that about Jesus.
Yeah, I love that old passage, Jesse, that says, judge not, lest you be judged.
Right.
But I think I had this on air. My mom's one of the favorite guests. I've had her on like a half dozen times, but she says once, Jesse, she goes, judging people, she says, once you let that into your head, all sorts of bad things happen.
Sure.
Like this represents. And I'm sorry, I have like four little notes to write down, but I put down the red verses. I wanted to talk about the red verses.
Sure.
And that's my teaching.
Yeah.
And I adhere to Tolstoy, Jesse, that says, where love is, there God is also.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'll continue with the letter. My thoughts, this one I decided to write the letter, actually. My thoughts revisited this flabbergasting response as I was approaching a tent village just off the bike path in Lower Bibrell Park. In the midst of one encampment was a prominent sign with a smiley emoticon above two words. A word rhyming with duck, followed by a word rhyming with pew. A table-turning message indeed.
Yeah.
It's exactly how I saw it when I was only 15 minutes removed from the other conversation.
Yeah.
And I think that's colored as a 21st century gospel message. I say to my neighbor, I have some experience with this too, before I say what I wrote. You know, someone had responded on this on a Facebook post saying, I went to Chico State, and while I was there, I don't think I agree with only poor people are homeless, but I've talked to hundreds over the last 8 years, and this is the one thing I cannot break. Right. This is this. I say to my neighbor, the next time someone tells you people are homeless by choice, simply ask them why only poor people make that choice.
Right. Yeah.
Ask them that.
Yeah.
And to churches passing God's judgment on the poor, I say to you, Mark 10, 21, 22, Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said, you lack one thing. Go sell what you own and give the money to the poor. Yep. And you have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me. When he heard this, he was shocked and went away grieving, for he had many possessions.
Yeah.
What would you have to add to that, particularly that last passage around, you know, homeless by choice and poor people? It's poor people. Poor people are the ones making those choices.
Well, it's interesting. I like how that ends. The person that he was speaking to was a person of wealth.
Yeah.
And he went away grieving. Mm-hmm. You know, grieving over what? Grieving over this tough teaching of Jesus, where he says you have to sell your possessions, you have to give to the poor, you have to. What is that person losing, right? To grieve, and sometimes I think it's more than just losing the possession itself. It's losing the power and the privilege that comes along with that. And I think that Jesus really had a heart for people who did not have privilege, nor could they earn privilege, nor could they. You know, there was no stepping stone to success in the community that he was teaching and preaching in the first century. Mm-hmm. And so it bothers me when we talk about the least of these, when we're talking about the people who have the least, that we just want to step all over them and blame them, but they can't get anywhere. Yeah. You know? I mean, we punish people. This is what gets me, is when you give people so many citations, you know, for just dinky little things, here in town, you know, especially with the sit and lie, and then they can't make it to the court, and then all of a sudden they're being cited for not going to court,
a warrant, and then for their arrest,
right? And so, yeah. Get a job, okay? Well, how are you going to get a job when you've got those things stacked up against you, and a person just gets stacked on top of it? It just becomes a heavy burden, and they can't go anywhere. They can't do what everybody, you know, why don't they just get a job? Why don't they just, you know, save themselves? They can't. And those are the folks who Jesus had a heart for.
Mm-hmm. Gandhi did as well.
Yeah.
Gandhi did as well.
Right. Gandhi, Martin Luther King, both of them subscribed to a principle called soul force.
Soul force.
And that was, and that really had to do with a person seeing the soul of others and reaching out with their soul and finding this kindred relationship, this kindred spirit with the people, so that they can serve them as if they were serving themselves. To love, like Jesus says, love your neighbor as you know, love yourself.
One thing all three of those folks had in common, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, and Christ, is they got proximate. You know, I loved reading about Gandhi, and he was adamant. He was very rigid on things, and he was very rigid. If he was traveling, he traveled with the poor.
Yeah.
He would travel on a train.
Yeah.
And his entourage would be somewhere else, but he'd be hanging out with the poor people.
Yeah.
And I think we really need to do more of that.
Yeah.
You know?
And the current Pope, I think, kind of gets it, you know? The current Pope is one who has a heart for the poor and has rejected some of the pomp and some of the privilege that sometimes comes along with the papal office there. Oh, my word. Well, if you're just joining us, this is Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR, and Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local seasonal and organic offerings of Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts. They have vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open 7 days a week for to-go lunch and dinner orders. Find Farm Star Pizza at 2359 The Esplanade, at farmstarpizza.com, and on Facebook. The phone number to order is 343-2056, and by Grub CSA Farm, offering organic local produce grown in their farm in Chico. Grub CSA also sells to local restaurants and at all three Chico Farmers Markets on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday, and through their weekly CSA vegetable boxes. More information at 680-4543 and on Facebook and on grubsafarm.com. That's Grub, CSAFARM.com. And I'm here, your third Friday host for Peace and Social Justice, Jesse Kearns, Pastor Jesse, as Bill Mash started calling me. And funny that we mentioned that, because Bill Mash is here with me today talking about some letters that he wrote to the editor challenging people to put their faith and action together.
Yeah. So this second letter, Jesse Kearns.
Pastor Jesse.
I really felt compelled because, you know, the story, that one specific story I told in the first letter, I've seen this over and over. This is a repeating theme.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the Christ-like churches, and I'm sorry to say, I do think they're a smaller part of the fraction than the un-Christ-like church that kind of puts some level of label on it.
Yeah.
But anyway, by my experiences, maybe a better way to color this, Jesse, that is not an anomaly at all.
Right.
It's pretty common.
It doesn't.
So I thought it was really important to give some of my history, so in Chico.
Sure.
About a year ago, a senior pastor at a local church told me the biblical passages about the poor were directed at the spiritually deprived versus the undeniable comprehension of the word to define those of meager means. They lied.
Yeah.
Perhaps 6 years ago, I was seeking help for those without a roof from a pastor at a local church. They said they had tried that with black people, and it doesn't work. What followed was a condescending conversation so disturbing that I changed my perception of their title from pastor to racist.
Yeah.
The brutality of Christianity was once described as a cult by Christopher Columbus.
Yep.
By a Christopher Columbus contemporary, Bartolome de las Casas, in describing the genocide of 15 million, that's 15 million,
I know,
indigenous people in what is now the Virgin Islands, all perpetrated in the name of Christianity. I hold no false hope that a bearing witness letter to the editor will cause eons of unchristlike Christian leadership to abate from their devilish ways. I do, however, hold tremendous hope for the goodness of the individual, without malice or conflict, to have tough discussions with church leaders and elders and to choose more loving paths when it's clear you're sitting in a hollow pew.
Yeah.
Good and decent people are plentiful. I hold these tenets self-evident, not just for the few, but for all houses of Christian fellowship.
Yeah.
And before I turn it over, I want to really have a conversation around this, but what was so striking, actually I'm reading the People's Voices of American History. It's a follow-on by Zinn to his history book.
Yeah.
But if you look at the diaries of even Columbus, Las Casas, and all the other contemporaries, they literally stumbled upon, in many, many descriptions, heaven. These people treated themselves, the indigenous people treated themselves with love and kindness and compassion, and they gave freely of themselves. And I don't have the passages here to read, but it was clear to me that these people were brutally murdered over the course of 40 years, 15 million of them,
yeah,
all in the name of Christianity.
Yep.
You know, and as a Christian, Jesse, I kind of, I don't even like the term anymore. I don't like to be called a Christian because there's just too much.
There's a lot of baggage with that, isn't there?
There is, and I don't really see, it doesn't speak to me. So when people ask me what I believe in, I say I'm a red verse Christian.
Sure.
I believe in the words of Jesus, and all I need to worry about is the fact that where the love is, God there's also.
Sure.
And that'll keep me on a straight and narrow. But, you know, you got any additional stuff to add?
Well, bad as this sounds, I'm the pastor of First Christian Church in Chico. I went to Northwest Christian College in Eugene. I am titled a Christian pastor, but I don't even like that term. I'm a follower of Christ. I'm a follower of Christ, which means that is who I try to model my life after. At the end of the day, Jesus is the person who I hang my hat on the Jesus hat rack, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could go way back, and sometimes I do, say Constantine and Charlemagne are the ones that screwed the church up when they made it an institution rather a movement, you know. And to a degree, that is true. But throughout the history of Christianity, there have been people who have risen up and said, no, this is not – Christ is not about the institution. Christ is not about power. And that's where we – I think where we get into some trouble is when – the people of Christ who are more interested in the institution and the power that comes with the institution, that becomes their drive, that becomes their driving force. I have a book that I want to recommend to you all, and that is Catherine Stewart's The Power Worshippers. Catherine Stewart, The Power Worshippers.
Oh, I love that.
And it was a recent book, and what she does is she talks about how throughout history that Christians who have sought power, who have been lured in by that power, all of a sudden make choices that are so antithetical to the teachings of Christ that it makes everybody else, it blows their minds. And this antipathy towards the poor is just one aspect out of that. Sometimes a Christian, and I'll go ahead and call them Christians, a Christian will vote for somebody whose life doesn't even remotely reflect Jesus at all, and say that this is somebody who God sent to save us from whatever. And Catherine Stewart's premise is that these people have got power, and all of a sudden what they want to do is create a theocracy, which imposes, quote, biblical law. Sounds kind of like Sharia law? I don't know. Biblical law, a theocratic rule where they have a king who just lays down the law and then everybody follows in place. That's their goal. And you think, oh, that's crazy, man. That's not possible at all. But the evidence that she gathers together, because she goes to a lot of these Christian conferences and things that talk about how we can win the country for Christ. And their idea of how they win the country for Christ is setting up this theocracy. That's not what it is about. Christianity, following Christ, is about caring for the least of these. It's about being like Jesus, right?
You know, one thing to add is one of the things that became the most vernacular of the election to justify the theocracy of voting for Trump: God has sent us worse leaders.
Yeah.
They've sent us worse leaders, while they ignore the simple fact they've sent us much better leaders.
Yeah.
Like Jesus.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you know that Barack Obama was a member of the United Church of Christ?
He was
the UCC guy, in Chicago. Hillary Clinton taught Sunday school in a Methodist church, or Methodist church in Arkansas. Of course, Jimmy Carter, good grief, you know, he just wears his faith on his sleeve. You know, these were people, and some people will say, well, you know, they weren't good leaders because they weren't strong enough, or whatever reason it was, or they didn't, their issues that are the issues of a lot of evangelical Christians. And please don't, I am not throwing shade on evangelicals, because there's a lot of evangelicals out there who are starting to see the light and coming on board. Jim Wallace in Washington, D.C. Even one of ours, Dr. William Barber, who is he has this Moral Mondays that he started mm-hmm. in Washington, D.C. He is
Poor
very much
camping,
yeah, yeah, he's very much an evangelical spirit, but yet he is all about empowering the poor and getting care for people. That's what it's about, you know. And I have a hard time. Even you said it seems like the majority of the people are the ones who are after power, who aren't.
It feels that way.
It really does feel that way.
And
honestly, I think it's because the media gives them the most attention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there is. Everybody talks about the decline of the, quote, mainline, or, you know, and I don't like the word liberal Protestant, but sure, let's make
that
distinction.
Either.
But anyway, they say, you know, the decline, there's actually a decline in churches all around, both mm-hmm. evangelical and mainline churches, because people are getting sick of the hypocrisy. And that's unfortunate.
I guess my comment was really directed at being very specific to the red verses. I find uh-huh. very few churches that I can poke around in and spend any amount of time going, this is a red verse church.
Yeah.
I'm going to hang out here.
Yeah.
Like your church. I immediately got it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I feel at home here.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really the intention I had to make.
Well, let's get out of the red letters. Let's talk about Paul. Everybody talks about, oh, this Paul, this misogynist guy who says all these things, anti-gay, whatever like that. No, he says if you want to see what it means to be a follower of Christ, live the fruits of the Spirit, which is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things, nobody can overcome. This is what it means to be a follower of Christ.
I love that.
And if you don't see those characteristics in your leaders, then they're certainly not doing their job.
Yeah. How much time do we got?
Oh, we have nothing, Bill. I'm so sorry.
No, you don't have to. It's been a pleasure to come on. Jesse,
oh, thank you so much.
And to talk to you about this. Thank you for what you're doing.
All right.
Thank you, all our listeners.
All right. If you are just tuning in, this is KZFR 90.1, Chico listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. This is Peace and Social Justice, and I am your third Friday host, Pastor Jesse Kearns. Thank you, Bill, for reminding me of that. Sometimes you get into a thing where you're, I don't know whether it's you're ashamed, you know, I hate to use that word, but sometimes when you're sitting on a plane or sitting somewhere and people say, what do you do for a living? I want to say I'm a metaphysical engineer sometimes instead of a pastor. But hey, you know what? I say that proudly today, Pastor Jesse Kearns. We have our last interview here with folks from the Shalom Free Clinic. I do not have my glasses on my head right now, but I am hoping that I am pushing the right button here. My guests for this segment are Nancy Morgans Ferguson, who is the director of the Shalom Free Clinic, and Dr. Ken Logan, who many of you might know from Thursday nights. Is it third Thursday nights, Ken?
Yes.
With The Doctor Is In. The Doctor Is In with us today, too, so we're glad that you're both here today.
Thank you.
What I wanted to talk about is life in COVID world and some of the frustrations that we are seeing just in general as far as the health and welfare of our population. I got to get this out of the way first, and I want you to tell me, Ken, if I'm off a little bit. On Halloween night, on the back porch of my house, which is a good 3/4 of a mile or more away from downtown, I could hear loud music playing and young people cheering and car horns honking. And I turned to my wife and I said, you wait, in 2 weeks we're going to spike. And here we are, 2 weeks after Halloween, and we went from orange to purple. We bypassed red altogether. Is it safe to say that that might have been a contributing factor to this spike?
Well, let's think about it.
Okay.
Okay, I thought about it. Yes.
Okay.
And Thanksgiving is is coming up soon, next week. And here we go again. And Christmas and New Year's, just this whole holiday season, it couldn't. And the flu season, had all those four things together, COVID, influenza season, Thanksgiving, and then the Christmas, New Year's holiday, and like has been, like is being felt to be the case by those experts who look at us and the cases, there's going to be major spikes.
Yeah.
We're heading into a horrible time for COVID right now.
Right. So with the flu being out there also, I imagine it's going to be hard for people to discern whether they are showing COVID-like symptoms or flu-like symptoms because of the similarities.
Absolutely. And first of all, the one reason that this is the flu season, influenza virus is around all the time, all around the world all the time. So that we have a flu season for a good reason, and that is because of what we're, partly it's because of this time of year where we all are inside. Because of the winter, we're all inside, we're together, we're, the viruses are able to be transmitted from person to person much more readily than during the open time of the summer. That's part of the reason that influenza season is when it is, mm-hmm. and we're entering into that. So add all that together, look at those facts for influenza season.
Yeah.
And that makes it, of course, increased transmission of COVID as well. Mm-hmm. So we're entering into the COVID season as well.
Yeah, that's tough.
And added together. It's never been seen. Of course, the COVID is a new virus. We've never seen a simultaneous influenza season and COVID transmission time in our community.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about this again in, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, but you and I already know the hospitals across the country anyway are full, and deaths are increasing, numbers of COVID are increasing already.
So Nancy, tell me what is going on at the Shalom Free Clinic. For those of you who are listening, this is, first of all, Peace and Social Justice. Here on KZFR, we are interviewing Dr. Ken Logan and Nancy Morgans Ferguson, both who are with the Shalom Free Clinic here in town. The Shalom Free Clinic is a free clinic for people who are uninsured or underinsured who need free medical help. And you've been here for, is it going on 13 years?
13 years.
13 years.
13 years.
So how are things going for the Shalom Free Clinic?
Well, under our mighty leader, Dr. Logan, we've made a lot of changes in how we see our patients.
Okay.
We're not allowing anybody into the facility, our patients into the facility.
Okay.
There's a big sign out in front when they drive in that says, stay in your car.
Uh-huh.
And one of our students usually goes out, stands 6 feet from the car, and finds out the name of the patient and what they're here for, if they're new or returning. And we go in, pull their chart, and Dr. Logan is sitting outside, along with our other practitioners, outside by the cars or underneath the overhang at Shalom or in the parking lot or over at Enloe and their overhang.
Okay.
Which is close by.
It's right next door.
Yep.
So we are not allowing people in at all. And every time anyone touches the door handles or uses the restroom, Dr. Logan has put together alcohol and water solutions, and we run around. Our cabinets look terrible. With this long string of...
It's actually a bleach... It's actually a 10% bleach solution, yeah.
It
probably smells horrible.
Oh, but there is nothing could grow.
I know, it's kind of ugly.
Everything is covered. We wipe down every chair every time anybody sits in it.
Yeah.
Our patients have to have masks on, and we have a supply of masks, and we give them a mask every time a patient shows up without one. Whether they're homeless and just have come for food or whether they're there to see a practitioner. It's not quite as warm and friendly and fuzzy as it used to be because everybody must stay in their car or, as I said, outside in a chair. It worked kind of okay in the summer because it was so hot, people could sit in their cars with their air conditioner running. Now they're sitting in their car with their heater running.
Because Chico has two temperatures, way too hot, way too cold, right?
Right. So we're still seeing a lot of patients. We're still seeing a lot of fire patients, whether it's from the Camp Fire or the Berry Creek Fire. And we're managing. It's just a little weird. Our students are no longer allowed to have touch our patients or really interact with them. They can sit with them, but they can't...
Socially distanced.
Socially right. distanced, but they can't take blood pressures or temperatures anymore. If anyone needs that, Dr. Logan does it, but our students don't do it. And we have, I don't know, a lot of students. We usually have about 50 to 60
yeah.
a semester
yeah.
that rotate through, sign up for the week they want to be here. So on the flip side of that they can't actually do the temperatures and things with the patient, they get to sit with Dr. Logan and our other practitioners and hear the entire conversation between the patient and the practitioner. And then we have a student, a nurse practitioner, and she has to present everything to Dr. Logan. So they can go in and listen to that. And what an opportunity of learning how they're going to have to do it when they get to medical school or higher education that they're going to be involved in. It is a blessing in disguise.
Sure.
To be able to have that opportunity to have Dr. Logan and our nurse practitioner talk about the patient and see where they're going with it.
Right.
I think they're enjoying that part because usually they don't get that.
We usually have them doing other kind of busy work.
Yeah.
And this gives them, I agree with Nancy, it's kind of somewhat ideal teaching situation.
Yes.
And besides, the other thing that they're learning is, and these are Chico, mainly Chico State students who are bound for hopefully medical school or doctor of osteopathy school or physician assistant school or maybe nursing school, some of them.
Sure.
And so this gives them an opportunity to witness and practice infectious disease care.
What? Yeah. And this, no kidding.
Like I was be saying a little bit on my show tonight. You know, COVID virus is unique. That is absolutely true. And we're still learning about it and how it affects us and all that kind of thing, transmissions, etc. But it is in many ways, it's not unlike other infectious diseases that we've had over the hundreds of years on this planet, you know.
Sure.
For instance, the one thing that made me think of that is there are silent carriers of COVID. In other words, about 40% of the people who test positive are not symptomatic, but they can pass the disease on to another person.
Okay.
Hence part of the problem. If we knew that everybody who had COVID had symptoms, then it would be much easier to isolate those people from
yes.
From uninfected people. But that is not the case. Hence, we all have to wear masks and social distance. And so, because there's 40% of those positive people who are transmitting the disease and they don't know it, and we don't know it.
Right.
So that's called a silent carrier. But I was just thinking today, I was getting ready for my show, it's like, hey, wait a minute, we got silent carriers in venereal diseases. That's why a lot of those are rampant. Like we're having an upsurge in the country in syphilis currently.
Oh,
that
my.
Old syphilis
that,
thing.
I was gonna
that
answer.
We thought went away.
Nope.
Yeah. And, you know, that's just a simple example, but I mean, one example, but the point is there are silent carriers. And so, anyway, so the students get to learn that kind of thing. And like Nancy said, I personally like the students to be able to do what we call shadowing.
Right.
Or sit with myself, the nurse practitioner student, or Dr. Thomas, the psychiatrist who sees patients. And so they can witness ongoing care type ways that we different practitioners do relative to our profession. And so those students can learn a variety of care modalities. And I just think COVID is horrible, but oh yeah, well at least they're learning something.
They're learning something. They're learning skills that are going to stay with them through their entire education.
Yeah,
yeah. Right.
And by the way, let me just say real quick, excuse me. I think we are COVID wise at the clinic. In other words, all the students have masks and gloves. All of we volunteers are masked and gloved. We do social distancing ourselves as best we can. Sometimes I have to slide up to the patient to take a blood pressure, you know, but I do it in as wise a way as possible. And like Nancy said, the patient has a mask on. It's not inside where the air is not moving. It's outside where the air is moving. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to be safe, all of us.
This is my lack of medical knowledge speaking right now, but I would think if we are doing what we need to be doing, social distancing, wearing masks, all of those things, that none of us ought to be getting sick with anything. No, we shouldn't be having colds or flus or anything. Why is that not what the case?
No, it is the case. I at least theoretically. Okay. I was just thinking that. I'm going to say that on the show tonight. Is that, yes, we are the only, if you're looking for any good news, are we? I think we are. All of us are trying to see some good news. If we people in our community do as best we can relative to preventing the spread of COVID with just what you said, mask, always mask in public, do not congregate,
right?
Stay out of public, and good hand washing. And with the holidays, I'm sorry to say, what I'm going to say on my show tonight is stay home. Now, everybody hates that.
Yeah.
Loved ones, love them.
Yeah.
And loving them and loving your fellow community members means stay home. That's a shut sign of love.
Yeah.
A sign of dislove or not love is to congregate. Because mm-hmm. that's a passing of the... that you're guaranteeing the rise of the virus.
Yeah.
So nobody wants to be responsible. I don't think anybody wants to be responsible for the transmission of the disease, the COVID, to anybody. A certain percentage of those are going to be hurt. A certain percentage of those are going to die. Oh, and while I'm on the subject...
Preach.
We... you know, this unique virus, COVID, yes, we're learning. And part of what we're learning, and please hear me say this, anybody listening to this, when we, the students hear this.
Every week.
Sorry. Is what we know about the virus is that it causes an infection in, I don't know, 60% of the people that obtain the virus.
Mm-hmm.
40% don't get an infection, okay? I mean, symptoms, but they're all transmissible, transmitting the virus, even though they're not symptomatic. But anyway, so that's the acute disease. In other words, for, I don't know, a couple of weeks. Some people longer. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a fraction of people who go longer, weeks with their illness.
Right.
Yeah.
Depends on the severity, et cetera. So... but then once that's over, in all of those 100% asymptomatic or not symptomatic people who get this virus, there will be, hear me say this, there will be a percentage of those patients who years from now have effects of three organ systems that we know COVID affects: heart,
mm-hmm.
brain, and lungs.
Mm.
Lungs is an easy one. Of course, it affects the lungs. Well, some of those people, I don't know, 10, 20 years from now, I'm going to be seeing patients and say, well, if I'm still practicing, and I'm not dead or something. But we're going to be seeing patients who are experiencing some chronic lung disease because of the pummeling their lungs got with COVID disease.
Right.
So it's going to be a cause, to a degree, of some people's chronic lung disease later in their life.
Wow.
That's one thing. The second one is heart. I knew this in the beginning. Within the first 2 months of the virus, I had the doctor. I was speaking with an infectious disease doctor from Menlo, and he informed me that he was seeing heart disease. Right. And so now most of us doctors know. We all know that many patients with COVID, the virus actually affects the heart. We know that, for instance, in my training over the last 35 years, 40 years, there was always a certain percentage, a small percentage, but nonetheless, where heart failure in patients, there was a small percentage of patients where we go, you know what? It's not from your arteries or your heart. It's not from high blood pressure over years, cause of your heart failure. Oh, you know what? It must be what we call a viral cardiomyopathy. Mm. A viral cardiomyopathy without knowing what virus. That was the suspicion. Now, with this particular virus, we know it affects the heart. Mm-hmm. So, therefore, I'm just telling you, I think we're going to see, years down the line, congestive heart failure, mm-hmm. cardiomyopathy, viral cardiomyopathies from this virus. So that's another reason to prevent, that you want to prevent. You want to not only prevent your disease today, but you want to prevent your heart from having problems later on. And then the other thing, of course, maybe a lot of your listeners have heard of, are the brain cases, mm-hmm. Brain-affected cases. I watched a little deal on the other day about a guy who, this was a well-known person in the United States, I forget who it was, who had the brain aspect, and it was almost like a stroke. He had to, and he's actually recovering. But my point there are causes of global brain diseases that we don't, Alzheimer's and other dementias that we never have. There are many dementias, people with dementia that we don't know what happened.
Yeah.
And so here we go again. I suspect years from now, people who've had COVID, hopefully it'll be a small percentage, but some of those people are going to have a chronic global, we call it, or overall brain abnormality because of the virus that they got today. And then, of course, the lung, back to the lungs. So I hate to be gloom and doom, but the only reason to gloom and doom is so that we're all on the same page on prevention. Mm-hmm. Prevention, which means mask, social distance, good hand washing, don't get together in groups. Thanksgiving is a telephone call, mm-hmm. or a video, whatever you call it. What do you call it? Zoom on the computer,
yeah.
Telephone, multiple telephone calls, mm-hmm. but not meeting in person.
Yeah, that's a tough thing to hear. But
I know.
It's the best we got to do.
Then, like a specialist was telling, I was hearing this the other day, was saying, okay, next year. With any luck, 1 year from now, some of these vaccines will be up and running, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And hopefully in 1 year, we can be back to having our loved ones together on Thanksgiving.
Right.
But if we don't do it now, some of those loved ones are going to be dead.
Yeah. Yeah. And that sounds harsh, but that's the reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. You are listening to Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR. And we're going to take a moment here to acknowledge our underwriters.
Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Quicksilver Courier Service. Established in 2010, Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Quicksilver provides courier service for private individuals, as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery service. And by Sonia Airy, Allstate insurance agent. Sonia is concerned about the community and helps families understand their immediate and long-term needs and goals. For more information about protecting your life, home, vehicle, or boat, or to roll over your 401k, call Sonia at 345-2351. And you are listening to Peace and Social Justice. This is your Third Friday host, Jesse Kearns, and we're just going to take this interview and go right through the show. So I bid my farewells to you. We're going to just run right into community calendar right after this show. Peace out.
And if you're just tuning in, this is Peace and Social Justice. I'm your Third Friday host, Jesse Kearns, and we are here with Dr. Kenneth Logan and Nancy Morgis Ferguson from the Siloam Free Clinic, and we are talking about COVID and some of the challenges that we are facing in our community because of this disease. One, I want to hear about the patients that we see at the Siloam Clinic. Some of them are in very vulnerable situations. Some don't have a roof. They're living outside. How is this affecting that population right now? The COVID, this being the COVID.
You know, I you have to think that it's going to be negative.
Yes.
You know, part of the reason that some people, of course, get COVID, when they get COVID, they have a problem with it, or then we can't always predict who is going to have a severe case and who is not.
Sure.
We can't. But yeah. There are some potential risk factors. One of them, of course, is age. One of them is chronic other diseases. One of them is whether or not you have some immune system problem.
Right.
But one of them is your overall health and your body's immune system from just your generalized care. And people on the street often do not have a strong healthy body because of their fighting the elements, their food problems. They're not part of us staying healthy is having adequate care for ourselves from a nutritional standpoint, of course, and from a sleep standpoint, mm-hmm. and daily well-being, sense of well-being, and ability to undergo a life of as best well-being as possible. That helps us stay healthy. Mm-hmm. To take all of that away in somebody on the street, and you put their immune system at risk greater than the general population.
Okay, that's what I suspected.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know, now with them all gathered together, mm-hmm. by the bridge over Vallambrosia and at the triangle, I don't know, you know, if there's an outbreak, I don't know if we would know mm-hmm. that there's an outbreak, but Siloam is providing food every Sunday, boxes and boxes of food. We get food from Contra Costa County's food bank. They drive it up here.
Nice.
And I pick it up. And we do blankets. I mean, we're doing what we've always done, but more of it, of providing food, providing warm coats, providing clean socks, and providing blankets. But I don't know if anybody is checking on all those people that are out in the elements. I have not heard anybody out there checking on their well-being. Or not. We just take care of the ones that show up at the clinic, and recently we've had a lot show up at the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more than we've ever had before.
And these are people coming in for food.
For food.
And clothing.
Yeah.
And clothing.
Oh, yeah.
And not medical care.
They're not coming for health care, usually. They're coming for...
Yeah.
And this food that Nancy's talking about is, what do you call it, non-perishable? Or
yes.
So
most
stuff
of the time.
They can, most yeah. of the time is things that they can take with them and eat later. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they don't. It's not a meal. It's not a cooked meal.
No.
We don't do that anymore.
No.
But it's things they can take out with them, which is better. I mean, because it will be meals plural for
right.
them if they. And we have plenty.
We have plenty, and my son and I go the first Saturday of every month and pick up an entire truckload of food, and we're careful to get things that have pop tops because so many people don't have can openers.
Right.
You know, you don't think about these things till you get in that place.
Except that you and I have to. Nancy and I are each going to buy a bunch of
can openers
to bring.
Yeah,
which
is ridiculous. Yeah, that's the first thing we have to ask them: do you have a can opener?
Mm-hmm.
Before we choose what they can have, but we shop for them. Again, they're not allowed into the clinic, but. Dr. Logan or myself or one of our students will pick out what they like and whether the can opener situation is covered or not. Yes, we're going to hit the dollar store.
Yes.
And get can openers because pork and beans and things don't come with a pull top.
No.
A lot of fruit and things do come with that. But they do have perishable, sub-perishable food, and we try to make a good selection. We're one of 14 organizations that picks up food there.
And we have canned meat, like fish.
Yes, tuna, salmon.
Salmon, so those kind of protein
good, healthy
foods.
Food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And peanut butter.
And lots of peanut butter.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, something, Nancy, you mentioned a minute ago is the people who are homeless and are in encampments like we see. And, of course, now at this time of the year, they're going to be more together,
right,
closer in this weather. And you said, well, you and I, we as a community have not heard about the level of COVID in those situations. And it made me think that, you know, when we as a country hear about the COVID numbers, what we're told, I mean, if you listen to whoever's telling us the numbers, they say, and it's probably at least twice that. The number of infected people with COVID is probably at least twice that, probably even more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And the point there is that many people, like you're saying, many people have COVID and don't get tested.
Right.
And those people are likely the people not getting tested, the people that are out on their own on the street. People otherwise are going to have doctors, or they're going to be where somebody notices and helps them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So people without ongoing help on the street are, my opinion is, they're less likely to get noticed and tested.
Absolutely.
And so it's an unknown fact. And it, just being a doctor and this being an infectious disease like it is, there has to be cases in the homeless. And it has to be a place of increased transmission among them
in
the winter months.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be.
It has to be. I totally agree. And it, you can get tested, but again...
Right.
A lot of them, you need to make an appointment.
Yeah. You got to have a doctor's order on some of the places.
Yes, or you have to have money. You know, some places that are charging $130 or so to get tested.
If we don't have a slam dunk, I'll be honest with you, we don't have a slam dunk easy test situation here at in Butte County or in the country generally. The reason I know this partly is my brother. My brother calls me the other day and asks me, how can I get tested? And I go, I don't know. And so I looked it up, and he had his difficulties. Now, he was able to do it because he has Medicare, and he went to a place where he got it done at a pharmacy, and it was paid for. But what if you don't have that? And what if you don't have the resources to look where it is able? In other words, that's part of the problem, and hopefully... That's part of the problem that has been in this country is not a unified national increase and reliability and increase in availability of testing. And included in that, hopefully, is part of the quick testings and the reliable quick testings.
Yeah.
That has been at a deficit since the beginning because of our current president. The next president hopefully will grab a hold of that. I'm told he will.
Yeah, and I'm hoping so as well. We are flat out of time. We could be talking about this for quite a while. Well, thank you both for being on the show today, and I appreciate the ministry of Shalom Free Clinic and what you all are doing.
Hey, KZFR listeners, you know what time it is? It's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar. I'm Matt Fidler. The Hispanic Resource Council, the African American Family and Culture Center, Semillas, and Anthem Blue Cross are hosting a drive-up distribution of food, PPE, and information event on Saturday, November 21st at 3 p.m. The event will be held at the St. Thomas the Apostle School at 1380 Bird Street in Oroville. Food will be distributed on a first-come, first-served basis until supplies last. To assure the health and safety of the volunteers, please stay in your vehicle and maintain social distance at all times. The Butte Environmental Council is celebrating 45 years of environmental leadership on November 24th. In collaboration with the Miriam Park Drive-In Movie Theater on November 24th, they will be showing a documentary called This Changes Everything, directed by Avi Lewis, with a screenplay by Naomi Klein. The event will include a beautiful silent auction in the barn, environmental award winners on the big screen, local beer and wine at the concession, and more. There are 150 car spaces, which are the tickets for the showing. The price per car is $40, with 50% of all proceeds going to supporting the Butte Environmental Council's programs and educational campaigns. You can find more details about this event, including more on the film, at becnet.org.